Okay, welcome to the Calm Parent Challenge. This is Patrick Ney, your trainer. And I decided something crazy. I decided to start doing some long form podcasts to accompany the Calm Parent Challenge. And this is the first one. And it's connected to module two, which is move from red zone parenting to green zone parenting. I'm not in a rush. And if you listen to this podcast, you probably aren't as well. What I'm going to probably do is just follow loosely the course of the homework, which is attached to this module, which you can find on the program page. But I'm also going to take opportunities to riff off everything that's there, think out loud, and maybe share some stories with you along the way that I don't have space for inside the homework. So if you're listening to this, this doesn't replace the reading homework, but it can be a great accompaniment, and I hope that it will deepen your knowledge. I have absolutely no idea how long it's going to take. I'm not going to be looking at the clock myself. But I did get some feedback from some parents in other challenges that they really appreciated it when they did have some more material to listen to. And oftentimes there were stories that I had to kind of fit into meetings where we were discussing things, which hopefully in these recordings I'll be able to share with you at no rush whatsoever. So this module is all about how to move from red zone parenting to green zone parenting. And as I'll mention in the meetings, I think it's really important for me to say this at the start. As mums and dads, we often want to rush into getting rules and boundaries and discipline, I guess with this assumption that we're looking to fix our kids. Because there's kind of this thing, right, where we're like, if I could just fix this kid, then all my problems would go away. Well, that's never true, because no matter how many problems you fix, new ones will come in their place. But actually, this Calm Parent Challenge is all about us taking responsibility. It's about us recognizing that we are as much a part of this dynamic, challenge, problem, if we want to use that word, as our child is. And as I said to many parents and some brave parents in our last Calm Parent Challenge, maybe I'll talk about Sarah, credible mum. Your son's ability to change is in equal and direct proportion to your ability to change. Your child's ability to grow, adapt, overcome, is in equal and direct proportion to your ability to adapt, overcome. So with that in mind, this module is all about us taking responsibility for the only person and the only thing that we have complete responsibility over, which is us. And the simple fact is that of all the parents I've worked with in workshops and groups, one-on-one, long-term, short-term, most of us, and this includes me, we're doing dumb stuff to our bodies, to our brains, to our minds. And if we make one, maybe two behavioral changes in our lives, we'll see a dramatic improvement in our emotions and our mood, which in the neuropsychological definition is defined as emotion over time. Now, this module is not going to completely overcome any individual traumas we've gone through. It's not about fixing us. That's not the right way to put it. It's about saying, okay, when I look a bit inwards, when I examine my life, when I think about this subject, I'm going to make one or two changes in my life, which I think are going to have a big impact. We're going to discover things along this challenge as well about ourselves that we didn't know. We're going to recognize patterns inside other people. I want to say this again. It's not about getting rid of any part of ourselves. When we go through this work, when we talk about this together, it's just about understanding ourselves in a new light. And with that understanding comes a new determination. And with that determination comes maybe a little change, a behavioral change, a change in our lives. And with that change, we suddenly feel calmer. And with that calm, we suddenly feel like we're back in control. And with that control, all of a sudden we find that change is more possible with our children and our partners or ex-partners too. So all that introduction is to say that we're going to get on to rules and boundaries and discipline at later stages. But for this recording and this module, moving from green zone to red zone parenting, we are laser-like focused on ourselves. You start with yourself first. That's the first step of this process we're going on. So I'm going to start with a section in the homework and the module, which I call Why Do We Yell? And this has been quite an interesting insight, not only for me, but for other parents in the challenge in the past. I remember a dad telling me this at the start. This was the thing that really got to him. Simon, if you're listening to this, buddy, thank you for saying that, because it really stuck with me. Which is this idea that we say, my kid does X or Y, and it makes me angry. They don't tidy up, they're not doing their homework, so I find myself yelling at them. And if you think about it, it's like activating event in that classic cognitive behavioral sense goes through me and comes out with the outcome. Here's the thing though. If we were 10 out of 10 on the stress scale, you know, when you've had a really bad day, everything's going wrong, it's been like this forever, you're under a lot of stress, you haven't slept well, it doesn't really matter what your child does, you're going to find a problem with them. And this for me is very, very interesting because we can have a really difficult childhood behavior, but when we're super relaxed and calm and just regulated in a good place, we react completely differently. So here's an idea which I just want to share with you, which is something you can say to yourself, something which maybe you want to write down, which is, my anger belongs to me. My yelling belongs to me. It's not saying that the outside situation isn't frustrating or irritating. It's not denying that at all. It's about placing what's known in psychology as the locus of control inside you. And so many psychological therapies, if you go and look at them, the way we go through therapy is all about, hey, I want to be more in control. I need that feeling of control. So think about it, right? If you're on holiday and you're super relaxed and someone's looking after the kids and let's say one of your children hits their brother or their sister, right? You'll know straight away. You're like, hey, mañana, mañana, it's all cool, relax. You know, like, guys, sort it out, find a solution. Your brain's relaxed, so your response is relaxed as well. Whereas if you're in that stressful environment, long, cold, wet day, super worried about bills, you know, frustrated with your partner or your ex-partner, if they drop a tissue on the floor, you're going to blow. So the difference is not necessarily the child's behavior. The difference is us. So here's this affirmation. My anger, my frustration belongs to me. And the journey of what we go on in this Calm Parent Challenge, but also the journey, I guess, as parents as well, is about saying, I'm going to take charge of me. I'm going to place the locus of control, the focus of control inside me, because I can do stuff with me. I can work on my sleep. I can work on my movement. I can work on my diet. Working on your children, it takes a little bit more time. And let's be honest, it's kind of like a continual piece of work as well. Now, the next section we cover inside the homework is that anger is normal. I sometimes see these people online, parenting trainers, and no disrespect to them, I'm sure they're doing amazing work, but they're playing this whole like, I will teach you how never to be upset, never to be angry. And my journey into neuroscience over the last few years has shown me that this isn't backed up by how we understand our minds and our brains. The neuroscientist Jack Panksepp, who was an absolute pioneer within the area of effective neuroscience, so kind of like the neuroscience of our emotions, essentially, which is still very, very early. And, you know, there's really not a huge amount of research done on this. We're talking about decades. He has demonstrated that mammals have this anger, what he called the rage system inside them. And for me, this is important. You can't fight evolution. You can't fight biology. There is a part of you which can be angry, will be angry, will always be angry. Evolution caused this to be the case. Now, a lot can happen in our lives for us to feel like we're yelling and getting upset more than we want to, more than we should. But I think that this idea that we should suppress ourselves and not get angry is really toxic. I'm thinking now about a dad, I'm not going to use his name just to protect his privacy, who was part of our challenge. And in one of the meetings, he said, I know I need to stop being angry towards my daughter. And I get why he said that. It's because he recognized that his anger was being really unpleasant for his daughter. It was impacting their relationship. His overall goal was to be less angry, but the way he was trying to do it was by saying, I'm just going to suppress this part of myself. Now, here's a general principle. What you suppress in yourself or others gets expressed somewhere else. So sure, you can keep a lid on your mouth with your child right now if you exert some kind of superhuman control. But I'm willing to bet that resentment and tension towards him or her will come out somewhere else as well. So as we wrote inside the homework, suppressing anger just feels instinctively unhealthy. My screen was about to switch off. I had to put it back on. I'm going to take a little sip of water. I hope you're enjoying this. If you are, of course, let me know. I'd really appreciate some feedback, which is really feed forward because then I'll improve it for the future. So we talk about some kind of affirmations, and sometimes in challenges, parents will agree to write these down. My anger is mine, not my child's. There's no such thing as a perfect parent. I can give up this obsession with being as good as everybody else or better than I am or better than I could be. Trust me, I meet parenting experts. The ones who are really, really good, and I hope I'm getting close to that group, are the ones who can say, yeah, I got angry last week. I got angry the other day. I got short-tempered with my kids or with my partner or someone else. That's me. I'm a parenting trainer. This is all I do all day long, other than go to the gym. I'm a human being. I give myself permission to be a human. Maybe that's a better way of putting it, even than there's no such thing as a perfect parent. And then this third idea, which is yelling does have an impact. So, you know, I think it's worth saying, although most of the people who come into this challenge get this, that studies do show that frequently yelling at children as part of generally a hostile relationship with kids does have an impact on them. Now, occasional outbursts as part of a typically functional family are not traumatizing. So I don't want any of us to get into this negative feedback loop where we think we're failing because we yelled a couple of times last week. It's perfectly normal to express your anger. Remember, your anger belongs to you, but your anger is also part of you. You can't get rid of it no matter how hard you try. What really matters is not whether you're angry or you're not, whether you yell or you're not. It's really about how you actually handle those moments in what everybody knows, thanks to Dan Seagetter's rupture and repair. I'm thinking now about a couple of parents in our last challenge who learned over time during the challenge to go to their child when they were both calm in what we call the green zone and just say, hey, mama got angry just then. I'm trying not to be. Could I ask you to help me? Help me be less angry. Help me yell less. Now, there's a time and a place to do that. There's also a method. We're going to discuss that within our challenge meetings and within the homeworks as well. But I think it's important to mention. Now, the next session, shouting doesn't define you. As I've already mentioned, if you're getting frustrated and you're expressing your frustration at your child, you are not traumatizing them. And whilst persistent long-term yelling as part of a pattern of control and domination over a child and many other negative behaviors can have an impact on them, in the vast majority of cases here, we're talking about typical parent-child interactions, which you remember very, very well from your childhood. So all this is to say, because it can be easy to fall into this thing about I'm harming my kid. All this is to say that the feeling you feel, the frustration maybe you have at yourself, is actually your organism, which is your brain, your body, and your mind. It's your organism's way of telling you, hey, pay attention to this. Pay attention to this and actually put energy into this. Put energy into this because it's important. So whether it's a negative or a positive feeling, and this is basically the foundation of what's known as by, for example, Antonio Damasio calls this homeodynamics, essentially, which is the neuroscience of emotions. That negative feeling you may be feeling towards yourself is actually a symbol of how much you care. Because if you didn't feel that, you probably wouldn't be in this challenge. So there's another reason to be grateful towards the frustration you have towards yourself. It's actually your biggest motivation to make change. And I'm grateful for you being here because I know it cost you emotionally and physically to make this decision. But now you've made it. Be thankful to those emotions, okay? Because they're actually driving you forward to being a better parent for your child. And I kind of say that quickly, but I think that's probably one of the most important realizations we can make when we decide to learn parenting. So here's a simple exercise. And you can do this with me now if you want. Place your hands on your chest. Take a moment to feel any stress or strain inside yourself. Acknowledge it. Take a deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. And say to yourself the following. I'm only human. My children don't need me to be perfect. It's okay if I've yelled. I can do better next time. I want to learn for me and for my family. I Okay, thank you very much for taking that moment. I can feel it. I know I can feel it, because there'll never be a time when I'll be finished as a parent until the day I die. And I'm always going to want to learn to be a better parent for my children. Because if I can be a better parent for my children, it probably means I'm also going to be a better person for other people I love. And it definitely means I'm going to be a better person for myself. I want to live a long life. I want to have a productive, fruitful life full of drama and disgruntlement and despair, but also full of highs and happies and love. And that only comes if I start to work on myself. So if you're with me on this journey, I really appreciate you listening so far. And we're going to talk about our stress score, which is a little thing we're going to refer to in our challenges from time to time. I'm probably going to ask you from 0 to 10 how high your stress score is. So 0 is you're in a relaxing holiday, it's nice and calm, just someone's bringing you drinks, you know, alcoholic or non-alcoholic, you're feeling good. 10 is, on the other hand, you just have to look at your children or your partner or ex-partner and you're going to explode. 10 is you are volcano, red hot, ready to go. Where are you on that score from 0 to 10? So right now, I'll just share with you the moment I'm in right now. I slept, I think, eight hours last night, which is pretty rare for me. I have an unusual sleep cycle. I usually sleep 6 and then have a nap during the day. But I had a really tiring weekend, but I'm feeling super calm right now. I'd say 4 or 5. That's not always true for me, though. When I first started my parenting journey, I was definitely up in the 7, 8, 9, 10s. Just because I had so much going on in my life, I was really badly looking after myself, making really bad decisions, just a lot of stuff going on. And the result is 8, 9, 10, God, you're going to explode at anything. Now, the mums and dads that come into the challenge, most of the time they're saying 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. When you talk to someone who says 5, they usually mean 9 when you get talking to them. And it does go up and down. But just keeping an eye on your stress score, and we're going to refer to it in the challenges, is pretty important, actually. There's a reason why this matters. At 8, 9, or 10, when you're in what we call the red zone, no new idea or technique is going to work for you. Literally, this is the reason why mums and dads say to me, oh, I know that, it doesn't work. And typically what they mean is, I know it in theory, but in practice, I just go back to getting angry and yelling and shouting and getting frustrated. And I totally get that. That's true for me as well. Because when we are under that state of stress on the stress score of 8, 9, 10, our brain is essentially operating from the limbic system, including the amygdala, which is well known, I think, by most people as that kind of fight or flight center, rather than using the prefrontal cortex and the frontal lobes, which are where our brain's more active and are associated with logic, with reasoning, problem solving, with following rules. New idea is up there inside the prefrontal cortex and the frontal lobes. So everything you learn inside this challenge or any other parenting technique you've ever learned is all up there, but that bit is not really active when you're inside a state of great stress. You're going back to your body's autonomic processes, the kind of automatic things you do. And that's why you might find yourself saying and doing things like your mom or your dad or whoever raised you when you were a child, is because that stuff is really deeply encoded inside your mind. So this is super important for us, because for as long as we're going to be in 8, 9, 10 stress score, we may as well not really bother learning anything to do with parenting, because we are the problem. And maybe that sounds a bit declarative, maybe that's a little bit harsh, but I think that's actually amazing for us, because it means that when we get down to where we want to be, which is, let's say, 4 or 5, we can be that fun, amazing, loving parent that we actually wanted to be, and we know our child loves being with us. Let me tell you maybe one story from a challenge we did recently. We had a mum with some mental health issues. And when she came into our challenge, I could see she was really struggling with the amount of information, maybe with the interactions with other people as well. And we stopped in on that score. And I gave her, which is our next subject, one piece of advice, one suggestion, one invitation, which is, dude, just work on your sleep. So we're going to come to a series of stresses which have a typical impact on our stress score. Some of these may not apply to you. Some of them may be super important for you. As we go through them, you know, listen, if you think they're not interesting, you might discover something. But if you think they pertain to you, listen up good and start feeling that frustration, anger turn into determination, motivation to make a change. because our goal is to be more at the 4 or 5 scale on that stress score. And sleep, without a shadow of a doubt, in my opinion, and it's confirmed by studies which show that it's the number one behavioral intervention you could do. I'm just doing my master's thesis on adolescent ADHD and sleep, and it's, you know, it's really well researched how much of an impact this has on not only our memory, not only our intelligence, not only our ability to complete tasks, but also our mood and our emotions. Now, disturbingly, some of the studies that I've read show that teenagers are getting chronically small amounts of sleep, between 6 and 7, and they really need between 8 and 10. But we're talking about ourselves. So when I ask mums and dads how much sleep they've had, we've had answers like 5 and 6. We've had answers like 6 and 7. Not so many 7s to 8s. We are chronically sleep deprived. And as a result, we are overly stuffed with the stress hormone cortisol. So this impacts our circadian rhythm, when we go to sleep, what kind of quality sleep we have, how long we sleep for. And this has a knock-on, or comorbid, I guess you could say, effect on our mood and our emotion. Mood, as you remember, is emotion over time. So look, when I talk to people about this, I can see everyone's heads nodding and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I get it. I have a bit of a weird sleep routine. I'll sleep between 6.5, sometimes 7 hours during the night, between about 8:30 and, you know, 3-ish in the morning, that kind of thing. I then get up and then I have a half an hour nap during the day. I'm not sure I'd recommend that, but I definitely have the chronotype, which is kind of like the sleep cycle type of someone who wakes up early. And this is true for all my family. It's very rare if anyone's sleeping past 6 a.m. in the morning on a family holiday. Most people don't sleep like that. But I have super worked on my sleep quality. And I think for me, the biggest and most important thing, and I guess this is also true for kids of families I've worked with, is that quality of the evening routine. But listen, I'm going to go through some ideas which might help you here, okay? Number one is screens before beds. We had a couple of parents in our last challenge, Kathy and Sarah, and they were accountable for each other and they worked for a 2-hour moratorium on no phones before bed. I'm not going to go into the blue light thing about cortisol and melatonin, but I think we all get this, right? It's not just the blue light, it's also what we're reading on these screens. And the classic mistake of working in the evenings, which I know is easy to criticize, but for some parents is the only time they can squeeze work in. I get it, fine. But if you're like me, you'll notice the difference when you have 3 to 4 hours rest, relaxation if you can, obviously with your family obligations as well, whatever you have to do, but essentially just stopping working so that you're not carrying your work stress into your evening routine. Caffeine, another classic disruptor. Sleep routine, many parents in our challenge sleep at weird and random times, and there's a Google sleep expert, Matthew, I forget his name now, Goodwin, I think it is, who says the number one most important thing is going to bed at the same time. Number one most important thing. And evening meals as well. Then of course there's the classic about sleeping with your partner. Maybe you have, for example, too bright a room, maybe your partner's snoring or has sleep apnea. Or indeed, you may just have a newborn, in which case your sleep for quite some time is going to be bad. Now, we don't cover during this homework sleeping with our kids. Co-sleeping can be great. It can also be a complete disaster. I'm a huge fan of co-sleeping if we don't have much contact time with our kids. Or, for example, if we've been through a lot of trauma or our child is suffering from trauma response. But that can obviously have a massive impact on our own sleep quality. Either way, all this is to say that if you do make a change in your sleep, everything's going to improve for you. I've got a little graph inside the homework if you can't see it, which shows that life and marital satisfaction really does go up when your kids leave the house. But that's also kind of just to say that with smaller kids and interrupted sleep because they've got colic if they're small kids, or they've got like a health or sickness issue, this is going to have a massive impact on us. So coming back to the mum I said in the challenge, I said, as long as you're sleeping 5 hours a night and sleeping at weird times, none of the learning that you've got ahead of you is going to work. So the first thing I'm going to invite you to commit to is to improve your sleep. And actually, that's our second homework for this module, which is, you know, for you to make one change to improve your sleep, whatever it is. Could be the screen time, like Kathy and Sarah did in our last challenge. Could be the routine, like the mum I was telling you about, where she decided to try and go to bed at the same time every single night. You already know probably that you want to do something here. You just haven't yet committed to it. So if you like, we can make this part of your commitment to me. Maybe you want to share it inside the challenge where you say, hey, this is what I've decided to do. Now, the next thing is diet. I decided within the homework not to go into too much detail on this subject, not because I don't think it's important, but because, you know, we can't cover so much at once. But I've introduced diet because there are more and more studies showing that ultra-processed foods have been linked to depression, to anxiety, to mood, instability. I guess there's certainly enough confusion out there to say whether it's correlation or cause. But I don't think to anyone, if you've been eating clean and you go back onto ultra-processed, I don't know about you, but I certainly feel significantly worse when I eat ultra-processed food. I can feel the mental difference immediately. Now, right now, more than 2/3 of the diets in westernized countries for children and adults are ultra-processed foods. And I don't think calling it the new smoking is a big exaggeration. I think within a 5 to 10 year framework, we will be surprised by what we were prepared to put into our mouths and our children's mouths as well. For me, over the last 6 or 7 years, I have absolutely moved away from ultra-processed food. It's just my own journey, and I'm not saying this to guilt, shame, or make anyone who's eating a lot of ultra-processed food feel guilty in any way. That's not what I mean whatsoever. But I decided I'm going to try and do as much home cooking as I can. I cook most of the meals in our family. I hope my wife doesn't hear this. She'll probably bristle. But it's true. It's true, darling. It just is true. I do that weekend batch cooking for everyone. I try and eat as much single product food as possible. So I'm on one of those kind of a higher protein diets. And I'm not giving medical advice here. This is just my way. It works for me. You know, like a steak with some vegetables. Ultra-processed, I think we know it when we see it, right? You look at that label and you read it and you go, I don't recognize any of these ingredients here. More and more attention is being paid in the US, to which has a very different food environment to the EU, where I live, Europe, to those colorants, food colors, possibly being carcinogenic. I'm just going to invite you now to think about how you can make one change within your family, one diet-related change. Just to give mums and dads of neurodivergent kids maybe another heads up on this, there's also studies which show, I was reading a Dutch paper from 2012, I believe. What they did was they took a pretty large group of Dutch kids with ADHD. And what they did was they stripped back their diet to just a series of hypoallergenic foods. Pretty savage diet change. Not something I can see most kids going through, but these kids did. Things like lamb, for example, and I think broccoli and a few other things. It's a pretty restricted diet. 67% of those ADHD kids, their symptoms completely disappeared. So it's not an exaggeration to say, and there's other studies like that, that dietary interventions can have a massive impact on mood. And if it's true for kids, it's also true for us as well. Now, the next thing is movement. The human body is designed to move. And yet, especially if we live in a car culture like the US or Canada, we often don't get enough movement. Now, I have noticed that ever since we've had a dog, which is for the last 3 years, it's been super easy for me to get to 10,000 steps a day because the dog kind of just needs that much. So the average American apparently does walk about 4,000 to 5,000 steps a day. I'm going to invite you just to set yourself the goal of maybe trying to get that to 7,000. And if it gets to 7,000, maybe try and get it to 10,000. I used to be kind of like a crazy exerciser where I'd be doing ultra marathons and running and all the rest of it. I've tried to maybe just slightly slow down on the cardio there and do more walking. It's way less of an impact on the body, but it has a massive impact on the mind. Now, if you can combine this with time in nature with no phone, and that's a huge game changer if you can get your phone out of your hand as much as possible, your mood will soar. That's my promise to you. 10 to 15 minutes in nature with some sunlight as well, if you can get it, a little bit hard where I live, will have a massive impact on your mood. And of course, you can bring your kids with it. Now, the next stressor which we're talking about, which gets us high on that stress score, is the fact we are completely and utterly distracted. I wrote with this whole story, I'm not going to share it now, about how distracted I can be in the evenings, which is a lot. I work with mums and dads in North America, so that's evening my time. Sometimes we have some team calls with our team in America. I got unresolved questions or maybe something I need to remember, and I can very often during the day be in three places at once, you know, with my distraction up really high. So then my wife might come in, Maya, my kids come in, maybe they ask me a question, maybe they want to do something or play, and I'm not really there, you know, because I'm off somewhere else in my mind, solving a problem, trying to work out a flow or a process, just essentially not present. Now, there's a great term called cognitive load, which I came across when I was certifying as a play therapy practitioner, which really helps understand both kids, neurotypical and neurodivergent. But essentially it's this, which is your brain only has so much bandwidth, or your mind rather, and it can only really do one thing at a time. So when your cognitive load gets too stretched, I guess you could think about maybe it's like a glass of water, right? The classic example is your cup full or empty? It's almost like the more cognitive load you have, the less reserve you have within your mind to deal with new ideas, new intrusions. So when we place ourselves in a position where we have really high cognitive load, we are putting ourselves into that position, at a static load, I guess, thinking about the more wider concept. We're putting ourselves in a position where we're going to be short-tempered and angry with other people. So multitasking or having a distracted mind whilst essentially being an inevitable part of being a parent, because we are trying to be a great mom, a great dad, a great partner, a great employee, great to ourselves as well. And essentially you can't do all four things at once well. You can do four things badly, three things on average, a couple of things goodly, as my daughter would say, and then one thing well. So look, I'm not here to judge anyone who's multitasking. I know you're probably thinking about a bill to pay, a meal to cook, you know, a trip to go on while simultaneously trying to be a mom or a dad. But just so we all recognize, right, that the consequence of placing ourselves into that cognitive load and being overstimulated or over-distracted is that we will almost certainly have more reactive, aggressive responses towards our children. I put something down inside the homework, which I think puts this pretty well, right? Which is, when you're working, just work. When you're cooking, just cook. And when you're parenting, just parent. So during COVID, I often had questions from parents like, how can I persuade my two-year-old to do something whilst I go off and work? And unfortunately, the answer is, for two-year-olds and three-year-olds, is they need the constant presence of an adult around them, or almost near constant, in the vast majority of cases. So you can't cook, write emails, and simultaneously look after a two-year-old. It's not possible. Now, I know for some of us, we're in a position where we just can't avoid that. But I have to tell you, there's typically one thing which is really causing us to be distracted, and it's our mobile phones. So I know you're probably overloaded hearing this right now, but maybe you can take a look inside, I want to say, your camera mirror, as it were, like your camera phone, and think to yourself, how long am I using this for? What do I need this for? If I want to be a great parent for my children, maybe it's time for me, for example, to do something like no phones after 6 o'clock, because I've done all my work. I'm just thinking out loud, right? You need to apply this to your own situation. I invite you to reply this to your own situation. I've done my work. My kids are home. My partner's home, if I have a partner in the home. I've done everything. I don't need my phone. I can place it to one side, maybe with volume on, just in case someone wants to ring me in an emergency. And I can just be mom or just be dad now for the next 3 hours. Easier said than done. And I know that an addict will always look for excuses, right? So I know we've got excuses, like we have this work call, we've got this. But in most of our contracts, there's no obligation for us to be 24-hour available. We've just kind of fallen into this habit of doing so. 95% of work questions and queries are not that important. You can deal with them later on. No one gets upset if you reply 3 hours later. And let's be honest, the work never ends. So we can choose whether we're distracted, serially distracted, whether we have a huge amount of cognitive load, whether we're snappy and short, or we can choose whether we're focused and calm. This belongs to us, coming back to that idea at the start of this recording, at the start of this module. This belongs to us, not to them. So again, all of this is for us to think out loud and think about, am I distracting myself? And the answer for me is, it depends. There have been phases inside my life where I've been super distracted and there genuinely has been an awful lot going on. And then there's been phases in my life where I've made much better choices around my phone. So I'll just give you one idea. I have regularly over the past few years given my phone to my wife in front of my kids and said, hey, please can you hide this in your room? I don't need this phone. I need to be with you guys. I want to be with you guys for the rest of the evening. I want to play. I want to work. I want to read. I want to be with you, connect with you. Have there been some times when I've snuck off for my phone or tried to get it because I've thought up some excuse about why I need it or I have had a reason? Sure, there have. But I've got to tell you now, when I wake up the next morning, not only do I read a lot more, which is calming in of itself. I write in my journal a lot more. I tend to get more stuff done when I go to the gym, when I go for a run. I'm back earlier. I'm way more present with my family. And I can feel the difference in me emotionally. Now, maybe that's a bit of an extreme example. I don't know too many people that do that. But not to have a phone from 6 in the evening till 8 o'clock the next morning, for me, is a game changer. And I can feel the difference in my emotions and my feelings. Hey, maybe that's something you can try. Maybe it's just you want to be like Kathy and Sarah, who did a 2-hour moratorium before they went to bed. Maybe you got more self-control than I have. maybe, or maybe not. Either way, listening to this, I hope you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I'm gonna do that. Now, we are getting onto that section in the Side the Homework where we talk about kids' behaviors. So everything we've been talking up until now has been about us. But I'm going to talk about what we do when it comes to our relationships with our kids. So the first thing is that, sure, we've said our reaction belongs to us. But the second thing is for sure that we have the right to be frustrated when we consider their behavior is inappropriate, when it's wrong, when it shouldn't be happening, or whether it's not part of our family dynamic. So I'm going to go through some ideas here, which I hope are going to help you. Okay, and the first one I've written here is understanding what's normal and what can change. I'll just maybe read a little bit from the text because I think this is helpful. Many frustrating behaviors in children are age appropriate. Toddlers have meltdowns. Young kids might lie or grab toys. Tweens can use swear words for the first time to see what happens. And teenagers for sure can be self-centered, egocentric, and disrespectful. These are all normal developmental stages for kids. And the reason why I mention this is when I'm working with a mum or a dad one-on-one, one of the things I'm going to do, let's say, for example, I had a mum as part of our challenge and her kid was having meltdowns. And I'm going to ask straight away, how old is your child and how many meltdowns and how long do they last? And if a child's 2 years old, my dog Boom is scratching himself in the background in case you're wondering what that noise is, if you can hear it. If a child is 2 years old and the meltdowns maybe once a day, let's say, or twice a day, and it's for a couple of minutes each time, that is typical meltdown territory for a two-year-old. So one of the things you can look at and ask yourself is this normal for my child's age? And if it is, part of this journey of ours is understanding that, hey, you can't raise a family without at least normal behavior. And some of that normal behavior is going to be definitely unpleasant for us. That can help us because it can help us to, I guess, not sweat the small stuff and really focus on the really important things. Now, we're talking obviously about age-appropriate behavior, but there may well be behavior which we feel is completely inappropriate. It feels out of control, or we feel out of control, or it's just something that we really want to change. So there is good news, okay? I'm telling you this now. You can change that, and this Calm Parent Challenge is designed to help you do that. Now, I want to come back to what I've written here is the importance of self-work, because this is something which we cannot state enough. If you are 8, 9, 10 on that stress score, if you feel like you're exploding at the drop of a hat, if you know there's a huge amount of stress in your life, maybe you're a survivor of trauma and you're bringing that with you and you know how much it impacts you, just recognize this. I had to be careful how to put this, okay? It is more important for you to work on yourself over the course of the weeks that you're in the challenge than it is for you to work on your child. The change you want to see in your child begins with you. I know you want to see them change for sure. So ask yourself, how open are you to change? We cannot expect more from our children than we are able to give. So if you have realized your stress score is 8, 9, 10, the most important thing I'd like you or invite you to take from this recording, from this discussion is I'm going to work on me first. The change I make on me is going to be fast because it's me and I can own it 100%. Now, when I feel like I'm down at 4, 5, 6, then I can start to do the following work. And this is the way this calm parent challenge is currently scheduled and structured, okay? The first thing is I'm going to work out why my kid is behaving the way they are. And the mums and dads who go through this challenge tell me this is one of the most important things which helps them to calm down. So part of that is understanding whether it's age appropriate or not. But part of it is also understanding that child's behavior, I'm having a problem saying that word, kind of important for me, has a why. And when you can work out what the why is behind a child's behavior, a lot of the judgment and the frustration towards them just disappears, literally disappears. You get the why, so you now know what to focus on. Now, you're going to do that inside this Calm Parent Challenge. It's a fundamental part of the journey you go on. And I just wanted to signpost the fact that's going to come for you. The next stage is rules and boundaries. So having worked on ourselves, having worked on the why behind our kids' behaviors, we're in a position to bring in rules and boundaries, and you're going to get at least 10 amazing ideas to help you do that as part of this challenge. Rules and boundaries are designed to teach rather than punish, and we'll be breaking that down. And then we start to work on discipline. And discipline is not about punishing or hurting our child. It's about teaching them that if they choose a certain behavior, they're going to choose a certain outcome, a certain consequence. Now, we go through that in much more detail in further modules, okay? But I just wanted to signpost the fact that this is going to come for you. Now, one subject I want to share with you now, which is super important to us changing that stress scale, is really rooted on who we are and where we came from. Our past is shaping our parenting today. And maybe I wasn't expecting this when I started working in the Calm Parent Challenge, but I've certainly seen this working in group work before, workshops and one-on-one work as well, which is so much of our frustration towards our children or with regard to our children comes because of the image that we had around who or what we thought they could be or should be. And likewise, the same for us as well. And I think like a basic kind of source of frustration is the difference between expectation and reality in pretty much every single one of our relationships. If you're reading the homework, you'll see that I put a little picture there of a man proposing to a woman saying, "Will you be my unpaid therapist?" Quite a lot of this comes out in our relationships, and both our partners or ex-partners and our children, they see sides of our personality and soul that maybe we're not aware of because we're growing with them at the same time. So I invite you as part of this module to think about the example you got from your parents, and maybe the example that you're trying to run away from as well. A lot of parents tell me, "I'm determined not to be like my mum and dad." And then I see them kind of acting like their mum and dad, just maybe not in that same form. I've named a parent here, Andy. It's not her real name. I just want to protect her, her confidentiality in her story. And at the start, when she came into the challenge, she was literally, I can remember her now, bless her, kind of so tense, so stressed. And her whole vibe was, "I need to fix my daughter." She was tense and stressed because her body was controlling, trying to control the rage that was inside her. And Andy, to her credit, really opened up and talked about the example she got from her mum and dad, the way she was raised. And there was an awful lot of controlling behavior inside her family. And that's not unusual whatsoever. So in a kind of bitter irony, Andy was determined not to make the mistakes of her parents. When she started to control her 12-year-old daughter, Jamie, because she wanted things to be perfect this time, she then started to exhibit the behavior she disliked inside her mum and dad. Now, she didn't see it at the time. She had the best of intentions. She was trying to make sure Jamie didn't make X mistake or Y mistake or didn't fall into that pattern of behavior. But ironically, she was creating the conditions in which the very same problem emerged. Now, Andy's journey has been amazing. It's not about her getting rid of this personality trait from her. It's not about forgiving her parents or anything like that. When I work with mums and dads looking at these unconscious complexes, as Carl Jung would have called them, or these parts, as they're called in internal family systems, I like to think of them as programs. We've been running a program. In Andy's case, I guess it's control. You must control. You need to fix this. You need to sort this. We've been running this program for a long time. It's served us well. It has upsides as well as downsides, but it doesn't have to run us and our behavior and our thoughts and our emotions as much as it has done. When we turn a little bit of sunlight on these programs, we just find that they lose their power, they weaken, and they're no longer controlling us in the same way they were. So this has been, I think, a big understanding for me when I've been working with mums and dads. I used to talk about perfectionism, and if I found a perfectionist parent, I'd always be judging them secretly because I'm not a perfectionist. I'm a good enough obvious, as my wife says. Like, if it's good enough, it's good enough. Perfectionism connected to controlling, for sure. It's basically saying this, you know, like, if it's not successful, it must be a disaster. I cannot let it be a disaster, so I'm going to do everything for it to be a success. And this is actually an amazing program to get through life, because perfectionists really achieve a lot, but it comes at a huge cost. Perfectionists typically are willing to hurt themselves, sacrifice themselves, their health and their wealth to achieve a goal. I've worked with many perfectionist parents. It has an upside as well, just to be clear, which is perfectionist parents turn up on time, they do their homework, they're diligent, they work. If they say they're going to do something, they actually do it. So I've come to see the flip side of the perfectionist thing. But it's important for us as mums and dads, if we do feel that we're controlling a perfectionist in a certain area, just for us to understand what a total elephant trap we've created for ourselves. Because what it means is that if it's not a success, it's a disaster. Well, that means that everything other than the very small percentage success is going to be a complete and utter disaster. Which means that 99% of the time, if 1% of the time we're successful, 99% of the time we're going to be super unhappy. Either with ourselves, with our children, with other people. What I've realized is, I just said I wasn't perfectionist. I'm actually not being true. All of us will have controlling or perfectionist pattern inside us somewhere in our life. I'm remembering a mum right now who said to me, oh my gosh, I've just realized that I have exactly that, but only within geography. Kind of a crazy understanding, right? Like, I'm forcing my child to learn geography. They must learn geography. I'm making their life hell. I'm worrying about it. All of a sudden, I realized that actually, probably, it's not that important. Now, I'm not going to do the meditation for you now, but I do have a meditation on what I call parental guilt. But inside the homework, I do invite you to close your eyes and go back to your childhood and think about the lessons you received from your parents and acknowledge that these have been with you for your whole life and may have been influencing your stress and frustration today. And to give yourself an invitation just to recognize them, nothing else, not to try and get rid of them, not to try and disown a little part of yourself or anything like that. It's not about that. It's just about understanding that, aha, I see this side of myself. Now, I include within the homework an example. It's actually a great example, I think, because I find it commonly with parents that go through workshops and our Zoom calls for the program and also in our challenges as well, which is our attitude to fighting. So oftentimes I'll have a mum or a dad and they'll say, I have a big issue with my kids fighting. And the first question I ask them is, did you have any brothers or sisters? And most often the parents who never had a brother or a sister, or there was a big difference in age, for example, they essentially grew up on their own. They're the mums and dads who have a big, big issue with seeing their children fighting. And it kind of makes obvious sense, right? All mammals fight. All humans fight and play fight. No child is born knowing how to fight. In other words, how to stop hurting someone before they cry, or how to stop hurting someone before it turns out to your disadvantage. You have to learn that in your interactions with your brothers or your sisters, your friends at school, or your former friends, as it were. And you slowly but surely over time, and anyone who studies developmental psychology knows this, you slowly and surely over time build up a working understanding of how to navigate your way through the world. But nobody's born with that. So when you've had brothers or sisters, I had two other brothers, I'm a middle son, so you can imagine the violence. I was one of three boys. You see the same external stimulus, kids are fighting, but based on the beliefs and the understanding you have of the world, your story of the world, you have a completely different response to the parent who was raised as a single child, an only child, and just doesn't have that frame of reference. And I can see that, for example, with my wife, Maya. She was an only child, and kids fighting each other is extremely stressful for her, whereas it's not for me. Now, that's not to say that we let kids beat each other up until they really, really hurt each other, but there is a space and a place for children to fight each other. And play fighting is the best way to learn about boundaries and barriers between other people. Because if you constantly hurt someone, they just won't want to play with you whatsoever. And that's the price you pay for being an aggressive person. You push people away from you. So all of this is to say that as you go throughout this challenge, and I hope as you go through this module, you're starting to understand who you are a little bit better and where you came from. And the great news is that you are never you for very long, because yourself Dancy Girl talks about selfing as a verb, not a noun, is a process. It's never an end point. And if you look at most psychological theories, as we discussed at the start of this recording, it is all truly about working on a new version of you, working on a new story of you. So you could be, for example, that parent that says, I used to have a really strong controlling thing. It's still in me, but I recognize it when it comes up. And now I'm almost able to laugh about it. I worked with a mum once and she had this pattern, which was she was constantly negative about herself. In fact, she was almost like an Olympic master at it, because you could ask her a question and within a couple of sentences, she'd answer the question, but she'd very quickly turn it to how bad she was at X or Y. And bless her cottons, she actually agreed to the homework I gave her, which was for her and her husband to just laugh about this thing when it came up. When you can laugh at a program inside you, I think it loses a lot of its power. So this is who I am and this is where I'm come from, but this doesn't define me in the future. Isn't that powerful? This doesn't have to be all of me. And of course, this goes well beyond the challenge. This is a lifetime story that you're telling yourself, okay? So you don't just do this in 5 weeks, but maybe today, listening to this, reading it in the homework, maybe today is the day that that story begins, in which case I congratulate you for showing up for yourself. Now, we've gone all the way through this homework, but I want to introduce the idea really, which is the central theme of this homework, which is not only our stress score, but the red zone and the green zone and the blue zone. So this is a color-based way to explain Dr. Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory, which some of you, I'm sure, have already heard of, which is kind of like an update on that fight, and freeze theme. So essentially, we can either be in one of three states, zones, I call them. The green zone, ventral vagal state, that's when we're calm, it's when we can play, when we can think. Most of the time, we're going to be in the green zone. The red zone is when we're high on that stress score, 8, 9, 10, and when we're stressed and threatened and overwhelmed, we get aggressive, our heart rate increases, our breathing becomes more disrupted, and our limbic system and amygdala just starts to take over on us. Now, there's also the blue zone where we shut down and freeze and disconnect from other people, but typically we talk about green zone and red zone inside the Calm Parent Challenge because we're either in the green or the red most of the time. Now, one important thing I want to share with you is that our children can also be in these zones as well. Our children can often be inside the green zone where they're playing, open, thinking and talking, able to receive information, receptive to new ideas, receptive to us, or they can be in the red zone as well. And the red zone is when they're going to want to close down, they're going to lash out, they're going to become aggressive. For all of us, understanding what takes us into the green zone and the red zone is super, super important. Now, I mentioned this earlier, but let's come back to this, which is when our child is in the red zone, they're not saying and doing things deliberately. They're acting automatically without conscious or logical thought. And that's why understanding this red zone is so, so important. But this is also true for us as well. We can go into the red zone as well. And I love using these colors because you can use these for small or big kids. But I give an example inside the homework of a mum who's able to say, hey, darling, the way you're grabbing me right now is taking me into the red zone. Can I ask you to stop doing it for a moment whilst I just take 5 deep breaths? Boom. 5 deep breaths is an incredibly powerful way to stop yourself from being reactive. That's red zone, really. And taking just a short moment to go into green. Because when you're in the green zone, you're going to actually be able to say and do the thing that you plan to do or that you've learned to do when you go through this challenge or when you've just learned parenting overall. And there's so many different options you have for when you're interacting with your child, okay? So many different things you could do, but you can only do that when you're inside the green zone. So your third homework from this module right now, as of the time I'm recording this, is to keep a little diary of the things and the times where you've gone into the red zone, or maybe the blue zone if you want to include that, when you shut down and disassociate. Just keep a diary over the coming days and try and work out what the triggers are for you, because you know you and your life is very unique to you. And by writing down, you know, slept 5 hours, really grumpy, got angry at my boss, probably should sleep better, you're already starting to identify your own unique story and you'll be better at getting that sleep score down. This has been my journey for sure. I had a whole bunch of really unhealthy habits, a lot of coffee drinking, a lot of short charging my sleep, a lot of overwork, A lot of really unhealthy mental patterns as well. And the journey I've been on as a human, which is definitely not stopped, just to be clear, is definitely slowing down, being more in touch. Journaling, for example, has been a huge thing for me as well. That's my story. Every single one of us, we're together inside this challenge, but we're also doing this for our families and individually inside our lives. So we've been working, talking now for the last 55 minutes. I can feel my throat going a little bit. I just want to recap on where we are. We've learned that our anger and our yelling belongs to us. We've worked out that our stress score is something that we can manage, but if it's really high, nothing else is going to count. And we've been through a whole bunch of real big ticket things which can cause us to be stressed inside our lives. Now, as we're going through this module, this homework, this recording, we're starting to build up a series of promises we're going to make to ourselves about how things are going to be different in the future. We'll backslide for sure, of course, definitely. But just one or two changes from the work we're doing right now are going to be big things which are going to improve our relationship with our family. And the reason why I know this is because the parents who go through this challenge tell me every single time. It's amazing. Something changed, not very much changed, but everything changed all at the same time. So what's your promise to you? Maybe take a moment to write it down if you're listening to this recording, or of course, just complete your homeworks if you're part of the challenge. Make that a reality. Turn it from theory into practice, even if it's just that affirmation which you write down on the kitchen wall, which is my emotions belong to me. Share that story and that journey with your kids too. Hey, mama's trying to learn how to deal with her red zone. Things will improve, I promise you. Hey, it's been a real pleasure spending this time with you now. This is the end of this podcast. I look forward to meeting you inside our challenge meetups. Goodbye.